It goes through to the goalkeeper, Johns, and frustration among the home players, the home fans who have been treated on their return to the grounds to a really compelling contest here this evening that has been on a knife edge from minute one to minute 90, and now we have played 3 minutes of stoppage time. David Healy's down there. He's looking pretty calm.
Yes, yeah, I can see that the photographers gathering as well, Eric, because they'll want to get the moment if it happens. Because I know he's been accused in the past of being sort of dour and a bit grumpy, but you could see when they won the Irish Cup, he was smiling from ear to ear. So I think the photographers are all getting ready there for the
last
moment.
Last few seconds. Lyndon Kane, he's got to pump it in towards the penalty area. Canning with the header, and he needed to head it back across the penalty area. And instead, he's miscued it, and it's gone behind that goal, and Chris Johns, the former Coleraine netminder, just slowly paces behind the netting to pick up the ball, and it's almost over now. We're into the last couple of seconds. Raymond Crangle has a look at his watch. It's one each as Chris Johns takes the goal kick. He's got his whistle in his mouth. Has Raymond Crangle. The Linfield bench celebrates. The Linfield players celebrate. The final whistle. Linfield are the champions for the 55th time. And it's a League and Cup double to complete another memorable season, as David Healy is congratulated by Orne Kearney, the Coleraine manager, and other members of the Coleraine backroom team, and the photographers are out on the pitch as well to capture the moment as David Healy is embraced by his coaching staff, and a joyous moment for the players. It's their third title in a row. It's four in the last 5 years under David Healy, and their first double since 2017. They are serial winners. They came here off the back of winning the Irish Cup on Friday and needing to avoid defeat, and that is what they have done. They took the lead through a headed effort from Mark Haughey in the first half, and Curtis Allen brought Coleraine right back into it with an equalising goal on 36 minutes. But the Blues will get their hands on local football's biggest prize, the Gibson Cup, on Saturday. But the party has already started, and Liam Beckett, Linfield, worthy champions.
Ah, simply magnificent game, Eric. Absolutely magnificent. Credit to both teams.
We see many sporting celebrities getting behind Blackout Tuesday across their social media platforms. There have been the public displays of support from the Bundesliga players, and of course that very poignant image from Liverpool during the week when all their players were photographed in the centre circle at Anfield down on one knee showing support. There's been loads of examples similar to that. Well, I've been speaking to Nicole McClure, the New York-born Jamaican goalkeeper who plays for Sion Swift. You may recall she made her debut at the Women's World Cup in France last year as well. Well, she's back in New York now, where she gave me her take on recent events in the US.
Here in New York, I live in Queens, a very diverse area, lots of cultures here. It's been heavy for me personally. I see a lot of things on social media. My friends have been posting lots of heartfelt things. I've been receiving lots of messages from my friends who are not Black. A lot of my white friends who, you know, reach out to me saying that they stand in solidarity with us. It's been really heart-wrenching, to say the least. I see a lot of protests. As a matter of fact, there was a rally going on not too far from my home yesterday. Thankfully, it was peaceful and everything was okay. It's been emotionally, it's been draining, but I try to, you know, keep a positive attitude towards it.
There's been this huge global reaction. Is there a danger, though, that it all dies down and nothing happens? Or does this feel different this time?
Yes and no. This has happened countless times, and we've had countless, you know, rallies and protests and riots in response to an event that happened, you know, like this. But somehow I feel the positive side of me feels that, you know, this is different because we're in a pandemic and so many people are really educating themselves and really like taking a stand. So I'm only hoping that it will be different this time. And I'm hoping for reform, hoping that, you know, more lives will not be lost in during this time.
Have you experienced racism yourself, Nicole, in your own playing career?
Yes, I have. Of course, I don't think any black person I know has not experienced racism something or another.
Can you give specific examples of things that were shouted or aimed at you?
Sure. When I was younger, I think I was around 14 years old, I was playing for a club team in Staten Island, New York. We had a game or something like that, or some kind of training session. And I noticed that throughout the season, I was not getting a lot of playing time that I felt that I deserved. But of course, I didn't complain, because being the person that I am, I would just work hard and, you know, just, you know, stay in my lane and have my blinders on and focus on training. But come to find out, my mother found out that the reason why I was on the bench is because I was black. The coach was racist. And his bosses actually found that out and fired him from his normal job and also from coaching us. And looking back at this moment, I realized that it wasn't just me who was on the bench. It was me and my other teammates who looked like me. The rest of the black girls were on the bench. And of course, I didn't realize this at the time, but my mother told me this years later. And I was like, wow, really? And she said, yes, I didn't want to tell you because I didn't want it to affect your game and your morale, but this is the reality.
It did, and you're right about all the TV footage, Elaine. I think it was quite appropriate over the last number of weeks and months during this lockdown period that we got to see Jack's reign again in all its glory on TV, just to remind us of what he did achieve and how he endeared himself through his character and personality. But, you know, Jack Charlton was the Englishman who transformed the fortunes of the Republic of Ireland soccer team. He became adopted by the Irish as one of their own during this unprecedented era when the team scaled new heights. Remember, Ireland had never qualified for a major tournament, but suddenly he put the country on the map, reaching three finals in the space of 6 years. There was Euro 88 beating England, the enemy 1-0 in Stuttgart, 9 minutes away from reaching the semi-finals in that tournament before being denied by the Dutch. Then there was Italian 90, where they made the quarter-finals only to lose to the hosts 4 years later. Then, as you remember, USA 94, that was a second World Cup finals in a row, and getting their revenge, beating Italy memorably at the Giant Stadium. But you know, for the likes of our generation, we grew up in Donegal watching football through the prism of the Irish team, and the summers revolved around Ireland playing at major tournaments. And I suppose Big Jack, he took the team and he took the fans to places they'd never been before. And during the matches, the streets were empty. The country just came to an absolute standstill. And the homecomings, they were just a real cause for celebration. I mean, there was hundreds of thousands of people came out. And, you know, how did he do it all? Well, I suppose he devised a system and a style of play. He put him under pressure. And it wasn't always the most... exactly. It wasn't always the most attractive. It wasn't everybody's liking, but it got results.
It's not a complicated game that we play. It's an easy way for international players to adapt to, because they all play in different ways within a football club. Now, when they come to an international side, they've got to have a way of playing that's simple, easy to understand, and most of all, when they do something that they know I don't like, they know the minute they've done it, if they look at the box, they'll see me that I didn't like that. And they know at half-time that I'll say to them, hey, we don't do that, and we don't play that way. And people tell us it's not attractive. We've had five or six full houses at Lansdowne Road for the last six international matches. So somebody loves us.
A lot of people love Big Jack. And like you had posted on your Facebook over the weekend, you met him a couple of times, Eric, in Letterkenny, and it was just, you know, he brought some so much good times. He really did. Like, and his success had such a profound effect on Irish life. And that's what I remember about that time as well, in 94, lifting a nation.
Well, you have to remember his appointment, you know, came against a backdrop of uncertain times economically and socially. The country wasn't in a great place. Unemployment was high, emigration, the political landscape was unstable, and sporting achievement seemed restricted to a few Olympic medals. The soccer team were basically seen as a failure. They were continuously falling short in attempts to qualify for major tournaments, and morale was low. But Jack changed all that. He showed people what could be done. He brought belief, he brought confidence, and Irish people felt that they could, I suppose, reach out more and perform in the international stage. And Ireland had good players before Jack Charlton took over, the Bradys, the Lawrensons, the O'Learys. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he utilised the granny rule, and suddenly Ireland was making it to big finals.
You know, it's something that we've endured for 9 years. So, you know, I think she just had enough, really. I just think she's seeing all everyone else, all the other abuse, sorry, being condemned, and rightly so. And she just thought, like, she had enough. Like, where's our support been over the years? And, yeah, I just think she got to a point where, you know, it came to her tipping point, and she finally spoke out and about it. And, you know, like I said, it was nine years in the build-up.
What do you feel the reaction has been so far, James? Does it seem different this time, that people maybe are taking more notice?
It does, aye. You know, I think that's clear for everyone to see now. You know, the right authorities are now are speaking up and condemning it, and they're condemning it in a way where, you know, it's not their view of it, it's the truth. It's not one-sided like it has been in the past, where, if anything, it's kind of fueled more hate. This time it seems to be done properly. Fellow players have spoke out publicly as well and backed me. And, like, even today I've seen, like, the Arlene Foster, the DUP, Michelle O'Neill, Sinn Féin, the Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. You know, the list goes on, the political figures, like, and I welcome that, because it's not a, look, this isn't a green or orange thing, or a point scoring. Like, I welcome the support. This is about anti-Irish abuse and how it's been over decades in the UK. And when I say in the UK, I'm not tarring, I don't want that to come across as I'm tarring everyone with the same brush. But anti-Irish discrimination and abuse has been rife and been going on in the UK for decades. And it's not a cry for sympathy, because it's, I don't want sympathy. Sympathy is not going to help. It's a call for any Irish person, sports star, working class, anybody, just anybody that's Irish that has endured and had to put up with anti-Irish abuse, being called a paddy, a Fenian, a pikey, leprechaun, or whatever, and that is no longer acceptable, and they stand up in a, stand up and speak out against it, and because for far too long it's been deemed acceptable.
Can I just ask you, James, and appreciate your time here, about your brother Patrick, because he received a message today as well. Yeah. Patrick, who of course plays for Glentoran. Could you elaborate a bit more on that, and did that shock you?
It didn't shock me, no. I'd be lying if it didn't shock me, because, like I said, it's, you know, it's the stuff that happens day in, day out. But, you know, it was a young lad that sent it to Patrick. He looks about 13 or 14. And so there was so much hatred in the post, and I was just thinking, like, 13 or 14, you really shouldn't have that much hatred, in you? And never mind, actually carry it out, do you know what I mean? Write it out and send it. But, look, there is one thing I do want to say, like, the young fellow's Mahler has reached out to Patrick, apologising, so, you know, that's very much appreciated, and that's very big of her. And
Well, on Bloody Sunday's 100th anniversary weekend, Richard, two shock results in the GAA Championship means the semi-final lineup is exactly the same as 1920, Dublin versus Cavan and Tipperary versus Mayo. The Breffni men stunned Donegal to win their first Ulster title since 1997, while Tip ended an 85-year search for a first Munster title against Cork. Here's the Cavan captain, Raymond Galligan.
We knew from the support online over the last week and the backing we got after Monaghan that we knew there was thousands and thousands of people all over the world, all Cavan people, dressed in their Cavan jerseys, supporting us and screaming us. And we knew in the last quarter, we knew there was every single mother and father and child was at home driving us on. And we had our doom and gloom over the last number of months with COVID. It's been fantastic. Members of my own parish have passed away, and my own community have had a lot of hurt. But it's just, I hope we put a smile on everybody's face back home today by winning. So that's for everybody today at home.
Well, Armagh's All-Ireland winner Oisin McConville was pitchside working for our colleagues in television. Oisin, what an occasion, what an achievement, what a victory.
An unbelievable victory. It's amazing how the stars have aligned from 100 years ago. There was a huge outpouring. It felt like an emotional weekend. You can hear it in, you know, Raymond Galligan's voice there. You know, you've seen Mickey Graham breaking down on BBC. And I just thought, in an age where sport has become very clinical, it's all to do with processes, very much to do with video analysis, that it was great to see that there's still a little bit of room for emotion for a team that was given absolutely no chance to come through and do what Cavan did, and you know, it sort of restores your faith in not just sport but Gaelic football in particular. And I thought, you know, Cavan tactically got it right, but they brought all the firepower, they brought all the intensity, and it was just a joy to watch, to be honest.
Were Donegal complacent? Were they overrated? Because, as you say, nobody gave Cavan a chance, and every preview I read over the weekend went for Donegal, yourself by 6 points. How did the pundits get it so badly wrong?
Well, I just think that, you know, when you looked at Donegal, you looked at the progress they've made, you looked at Cavan who have been relegated.
The performance of some of the young players, commendable, as you say, but it's another defeat. It's one goal from four games. Is the team maybe lacking a bit of experience at the minute, or do you think this group of players are good enough to keep there in this division?
Keep us in the division? There's four games played, Eric. There's four games played. I don't know, do you?
My opinion doesn't really matter.
Well, certainly there's 32 games they play. If you're talking about relegation battles after four games, then I don't know where you're coming from.
Well, it was a relegation battle last season, and I think the fans' concern is that it's been a continuation of those results into this year. I mean, can you understand their frustration?
I 100% understand. At the end of the day, I'm the one that takes a flag. I'm happy to take a flag. But at the end of the day, I'm not concerned that we're on a relegation battle with four games and 32 to go.
What do you see that makes you think things can get better and that results will come?
I see good players on a daily basis that are struggling a bit over the last couple of games and give away really poor goals. Things have went against us in games that, you know, over the course of the season, you get a bit more of a break than what we're having at the minute.
Now, Eric White from our sports department joins us on the programme because, Eric, you have some breaking local sports news.
Yes, I have indeed, and it's just been announced within the last few minutes that Derry City and Declan Devine have parted company by mutual consent. The board wish to thank Declan for his services to the club and wish him well for the future. That has just been announced there by Philip O'Doherty, the Derry City chairman. You'll excuse me if I'm a wee bit out of breath.
Eric, you've jumped into the studio after going down a flight of stairs.
Yeah, I've literally just run down from the newsroom here to the studio. But that announcement just coming out in the last couple of minutes, Declan Devine has parted company by mutual consent with Derry City. Philip O'Doherty releasing the statement. The city chairman, I suppose, in one sense.
Was it on the cards?
Yeah, it's no great surprise. The team have endured a difficult start to the new season. They've played six matches. They've failed to win any of those six games. They've lost their opening four. There were signs of improvement in the last two matches, where they drew 1-1 at home to Drogheda, and last Tuesday night got a 1-1 draw at home to Dundalk when they came from behind in both games. But they are rooted to the bottom of the table. They've only got 2 points. There has been mounting speculation about the future of the Derry manager Declan Devine, who this season has introduced a number of young players, but they're still waiting for that elusive first win. And Declan Devine won't be in the dugout for their match away to Sligo Rovers on Saturday evening. We'll bring more news throughout the morning and on News at One on this breaking story.